Magandang araw, Podmates! May isa na naman tayong mainit na usapan tungkol sa bayan at isang problema na global na ang sakop. Ang disinformation o sa ibang panahon mas kilala bilang fake news. Ang kausap ko ngayon ay isang batikang profesor at researcher sa Amerika pero Pilipino siya na katrabaho ko dati sa GMA Network. Ngayon, isa na siyang leading expert sa larangan ng mga makabagong media, online platforms at paano ito ginagamit para sa propaganda. Hindi na raw sapat ang salitang disinformation. Influence operations na ang bansag sa research field niya. Dr. Jonathan Ong is a professor and disinformation researcher at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst and at Harvard University. Magandang araw sa iyo, Jonathan.
Nice to be here. Nice to connect with you, Howie. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. Yeah, John, I mentioned that you were at GMA Network for a while. Yes. I met you when you were my colleague there, but you were on the corporate side of the network. I suppose that was one of your first jobs out of college.
Yes.
But now you've made a name for yourself, in the field of communications research and media studies. How much did your real-world experience in media in the Philippines influence your career decisions?
Wow. Yeah, for sure. GMA was my second job, Howie. And if you remember, my first project was election 2004. So it was doing the branding and communications to promote some of the election coverage and the election specials of GMA. And that was my second job. My first job was in advertising for McCann Erickson. And so all of those experiences definitely shaped my own analysis, how I understand the power of media, legacy media, mainstream media, and the news in the Philippines. I remember also doing a lot of work with GMA Regional, na pumupunta tayo sa Iloilo, sa Cebu.
That's right.
Meron tayong mga barangay roadshows. And kitang-kita mo that at the local level for communities, news is so important for them. Entertainment is so important to them. They look up to you, journalists and celebrities, but also treat you as friends. And so I think that definitely shaped all my experiences. But I was also privy to some of the, for-profit motives of media corporations. And that critique is very much present then dun sa aking pananaliksik.
Well, had you always wanted to do this kind of research and enter this research field, and then you decided to work first in advertising and then so-called legacy media, one of the biggest TV stations in the Philippines. They seem to be like almost ideal preparation for going into the kind of research that you're in right now, no? Or yung sila ang nag-udyok sa iyo na uy, magandang gawing career ito sa academe, no?
Yeah. Yeah, I was very nerdy even in Ateneo. I took a BA in communication in Ateneo. So I knew na medyo academically inclined na ako noon pa lang. So a huge fan of film and different kinds of productions, but definitely parang immersing myself in GMA and how tangible television is to ordinary people. Parang dun ako namulat na ang experience natin ng media, ng television, kakaiba in other countries. I think about the example palagi of Kapuso Foundation and yung equivalent niya of Bantay Bata na yung media sa atin, hindi lang siya entertainment, hindi lang siya news. There's a real concrete element of charity, of public service, of intervention. And at the local level, it has huge implications. So, parte yun nung aking PhD, when I did my PhD in sociology, to talk about how the unique features ng ating media, di ba parang on one hand, meron tayong mga game shows that are skewing toward low-income people. At the same time, we also offer these kinds of public service opportunities through charities. And the close connection with news and charity operations, I think is quite unique to the Philippines. But we can see some versions of it in Latin American TV as well. Those were my findings for my PhD back in the day.
Well, you know, I'm eager to ask you about your current work, no? But before we leave your origin story, you covered or you were part of the network, GMA Network's preparations for its election coverage in 2004, tama, 2004.
Yes.
So take us back to that time. I suppose you've been thinking about that because, you know, you're a professional researcher now. Back then, of course, wala pa tong lahat ng tong nire-research mo ngayon, no?
Itong for
mga
sure.
On, you know, YouTube and all of that, no? But 2004, it was the early days of the digital age, no? What were the factors back then in 2004 for influencing people's voting decisions and bothered by what you were observing back then?
Yeah, great question, Howie. And thank you for giving me, you know, like a wide space to play with that question. Naalala ko during that time how we talk about Philippine news institutions and Philippine media institutions as the most trusted institutions in Filipino society. We were so proud of how 24 Horas, obviously yung equivalent niya, TV Patrol sa ABS-CBN, parang these were our daily rituals, part of our daily rituals. We watch these shows, they get very good ratings. We have a common sense of, you know, these are the important issues of the day. We have that shared sense of, okay, ito yung importanteng pagtaunan natin ng ating attention. At the same time, our entertainment programming also were ways in which Filipino citizens in a way come together and have, you know, shared jokes, shared experiences. So think about that sense of, you know, having community rituals around television na in 2022, kakaiba na. Diba? Na parang I look at, for example, Twitter. That's how I also consume my news nowadays. My Twitter is still connected to a Philippine Twitter trending topics. And nagugulat na lang ako paminsan na, sino ba itong mga nag-aaway na blogger na ito? Sino ba itong mga celebrity na pinag-uusapan ngayon? Parang you can have a sense na kakaiba na yung mga mundo na ginagalawa ng bawat citizen. And I think, obviously, with surveys that have also emerged over the past year, yung trust ng mainstream media, trust ng ordinary tao sa mainstream media, bumaba na din. And so I think that is how, in a way, I kind of like segue into our argument na may konsepto kami ng parallel public sphere na for us, it's quite distinct and quite momentous to talk about that in the Philippines in 2022 dahil hindi naman ganito ang ating media and information landscape. Even in the past, you know, 5 years, we wouldn't be using the term parallel public sphere. The idea na nagkaroon na ng split na dalawang information and media ecosystem na iba yung framing ng mga topics, iba yung mga celebrity, iba yung mga influencer, iba yung mga news pundits, and hindi na nag-uusap itong dalawang public sphere na ito. Kaya siya parallel, di ba? These are two parallel lines that do not converge, do not align.
Okay, just reading your work in the last several years, no? I mean, sometimes you get a sense of how the internet by extension almost the entire information ecosystem has become kind of dystopian, no? So I mean, parang it's become in a way parang a hellish place, no? A toxic place, no? But I want to rewind a little bit again, no? But after 2004 kasi the early days, or I would say the, I don't know if this is early days, no, but maybe the adolescent days of the of social media. You know, nagkaroon ng Arab Spring and people were talking about the, you know, the promise of of social media, this new space, the democratizing power. At the same time, few people were expressing regrets about the dissipation of big media, corporate media power, no? Kasi sabi mo nga nagkaroon ng less trust, and of course people like me who work at large networks, were a bit dismayed by this decline of trust. But people are saying, well, we have social media and it's democratizing people. It's democratizing societies, and it's a hope for democracy in authoritarian countries, etc. No, you were already researching media during this time, no? And I'm sure you were observing a lot of these things. When did you start becoming worried that there would be this kind of direction this age of promise, no? The Arab Spring, it was a global spring actually for social media, no? Was not going to last long, no?
I did not intend to, study online trolls. I agree with you, Howie, that there's a way of looking at and experiencing social media nowadays. It's so toxic, wala nang nag-uusap. And parang the idea na you discover like new research or new ideas, new concepts, or even films, diba? Via like reading reviews on social media. Parang that discovery aspect of social media, which was there early 2000s, early 2010s. Parang ngayon, it's just toxic conversations. Whether it be about US politics, which of course I also follow as an academic based here, but also Philippine politics. And the idea na we unfriend each other now, di ba? Parang kakaiba din yun. Maybe one way to answer your question is by sharing insights of, early studies that I did about social media. One was around Typhoon Haiyan. A lot of the discourse then was, digital media for humanitarianism.
Okay, so excuse me, I'm trying to remember how long ago that was. Was that... That's Yolanda, no? In the Philippines.
2014? I think
less than 10 years ago.
Yeah. And so yung discussions then was how can we use social media for fundraising, for helping communities who are recovering from disaster. So the idea of social media for social good. Ito yung mga usap-usapan sa social media dati. So we embraced a lot of social media for their promise of solidarity, for humanitarianism, for charity. Again, I go back to also some of my earlier interests in, Bantay Bata and Kapuso Foundation, and how I found all of those unique. Another aspect of Filipino social media was the story of migrant families and how Filipinos are quick to embrace social media because of the nature of Filipino families as always being transnational. Lahat tayo may relative sa ibang bansa or perhaps have a migration history ourselves. Kung dati we keep in touch with family through texting or through through phone calls, social media is a way for us to keep in touch with family members who are distant from us. I remember working with a mentor. His name is Professor Danny Miller. He visited the Philippines. I was working as his research assistant. And yung project ni Danny was also Mir Kamadiano. It's important for me to also not forget. They interviewed Filipinas in the UK, mga Filipina nurses in the UK. Tapos in interview nila, how do they use social media? How do you keep in touch with your kids back home? How do you arrange mga remittances, through Facebook or texting, etc.? And then, bumisita silang Pilipinas, and I was still a grad student then. And hinanap ko yung mga anak ng mga nurses na na-interview nila. And so we were trying to compare, ano yung sinabi ng mommy, anong sinabi naman ng anak, parang, and how do they also embrace social media or perhaps resent social media? And so the idea that Filipinos are quick to embrace digital innovations because we do need tools for connectivity, tools for intimacy and family connection. I think that's a real part of our story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we're not saying naman na nawala na lahat yon, no? Because I think all of us here right now in this room are still doing Facebook and, you know, the older social media platforms, and it's still possible to discover, you know, new films and, you know, find out you know, new things about our passions, our interests, no? Pero yun na nga, no? Nahaluan na ng maraming toxicity, no?
Yeah. And imagine, I'm just thinking, just to follow on with that, just to think about how those same transnational families in the context of this election cycle, I would be curious, diba, kung na-experience din ba, and of course, based on observations of ourselves as researchers, but also our other colleagues, and also lay observations na ang daming mga nag-unfriend, nag-unfollow based on how people voted, and based on, di ba, si tita abroad na nag-vote for Trump or nag-vote for Biden, pero nag-vote sila for Marcos and all of those things as well.
Yeah, you made an impact back in 2018 with a groundbreaking study, you know, called The Architects of Disinformation, where you interviewed people in the PR and advertising industries who were paid to spread disinformation or fake news, no, in the service of people in power, mostly, no, you know, the so-called trolls, no. I was at the conference where you launched this report, essentially you blew the lid off this whole troll universe, which was kind of shrouded in a lot of mystery, you know, a toxic mystery. But you presented the real people doing troll operations, no? So that was what a lot of people recall. But you just published another report that has broken ground last October at a Harvard conference. That you published, or no, you did, you presented Parallel Public Spheres, no, Influence Operations. So you don't call it disinformation anymore. And in your introduction to the report, sabi mo, it's no longer enough, no? It's no longer, it doesn't capture what's going on anymore. So that's why you chose to call it influence operations, no? Yung nagaganap ngayon sa internet, you know, in the service of, you know, winning elections, ngayon people in, you know, in the service of people in power or people opposing those in power, etc. No, but why influence operations? Why have you evolved from the word disinformation? It's hardly mentioned in this new report.
Yeah, I think we were looking for a term that has a wider remit, that has it's like a bigger umbrella concept that is able to capture a more diverse range of strategic communication practices that are not all illegal, but are quite shady and unethical, and that we need to be talking more about. And at the same time, it's a way how disinformation and its specific assumptions and our own interpretations of Philippines, now it's taken on quite a baggage. And so it calls to mind the idea of fact-checking of false claims peddled by online trolls. And therefore, yung parang association natin with the term disinformation is that parang nagha-hunting tayo ng trolls. Nagha-hunting tayo ng anonymous accounts on Twitter, mga fake accounts sa Facebook. Naghahanap tayo ng mga low-level mga bloggers na nagpe-peddle sila ng outright lies. Ang sabi namin, yes, meron pa rin ng mga ganitong pamamaraan na pag-impluensya for politics, for elections. But at the same time, we need to have a bigger frame that also talks about other kinds of unfair campaign tactics, the use of falsehoods mixed with truth, also mobilizing influencers in a way na does not actually get captured by campaign finance regulation. I think kailangan din natin yung pag-usapan. And then, and we give a lot of examples ng mga influence operations na hindi naman always about falsehoods, na obvious falsehoods, but iba-iba yung mga strategy nila. And that's what we lay out in this new report called Parallel Public Spheres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kasi pag sinabing disinformation, ang isang definition yan is falsehood nga, mga sinungaling, no, na kinakalat deliberately, as opposed to misinformation, yung parang factual error na binabawi, nag-apologize yung nagkamali, etc. Yung disinformation, yung talagang alam ng nagkakalat na mali, it is often malicious and mm-hmm. falsehood, no? So you have moved on to a wider sphere nga, yung influence operations, no? Nakinig ako sa podcast mo, no? With congratulations on that, no? Kasi it's kind of been a sleeper hit, no?
I like that term, sleeper hit.
Yeah. Well, kasi at one point, you were wondering how people involved in influence operations slept at night, no? I think you said this at Harvard, no? Yes. But listening to the people you spoke to on your podcast, they seemed quite comfortable with what they were doing. Parang yun nga, no? It's like yung attitude nila, why should we lose any sleep about this? We're not lying, no? They just felt that, you know, this they were helping in an advocacy, no? A campaign advocacy. And you made it a point to mm-hmm. include itong so-called trolls or influencers.
Mm-mm.
Kasi most of them were, I think the ones you interviewed were they hid behind aliases, no? And you even disguised their voices, no?
Yes.
They were kakampink, no? Or they were serving the Lenny Robredo campaign. Kasi may malaking assumption na karamihan itong mga online operations, itong mga trolls, disinformation, was in the service of the Marcos campaign. No, and mm-hmm. then there's even a academic study that seems to point towards mm-hmm. that. No,
yes.
So, itong mga in-interview mo, mm-hmm. what was shady exactly about what they were doing? Kasi kung hindi naman sila necessarily nagsisinungaling, no, they weren't spreading crazy conspiracy theories, etc. No, when you interviewed them, they were very rational, no. But so, what was shady about them? What was wrong?
Great question. So yeah, and you also bring in my podcast. So for Howie Severino podcast listeners, my podcast is entitled Catch Me If You Can. And there we actually interview at least one influence operator each week. Some of them we hide behind pseudonyms and we tweak their voice a little bit. Actually, yung mga nagpa-interview most recently for our season 2 are mga kakamping operators and influencers online. And hindi naman sila, for them, I won't classify them as quote-unquote trolls in the sense na they peddle hateful messaging or misinformation or anything misleading. But they're actually fighting the trolls. Yun naman yung position nila. And what they're trying to do, at least the last few episodes, we interviewed Super Negatrona, who is a big kakamping influencer with, I think, 50,000 followers. So, ang strategy naman nila is fighting fire with fire. And I think that's one of the themes that we also discuss in our report, na how are quote unquote liberals also organizing and trying to fight back? Could it be fighting fire with fire? Some of the actual tactics are kind of trolly, Howie, mm-hmm. in the sense na they will also organize and mobilize over text, na parang, hey, sabay-sabay nating i-report itong mga account na ito. So for listeners out there, this is the idea of the mass report hour for Facebook.
You had a term for that, no? Brigading?
Is that, yes.
Tama ba yon? Yeah. Brigading.
Yeah.
Parang brigade.
Brigade. Brigading. And for Facebook, they actually classify that as inauthentic coordinated behavior. They're not happy about that. One example, we discuss that in our report, brigading, its opportunities, but also its risks. Another one naman is cancel culture. Diba? I think, usap-usapan natin, the past couple of months, should we be withdrawing support from, businesses, from celebrities who are actually, supporting people behind, historical distortions or peddling themselves, legitimizing, fantasy narratives around martial law. And so what are the opportunities that cancel culture can provide, but what are also its potential backlash effects? Pinag-usapan din namin ito sa report. Pero specific discussions of yung mga more worrying kinds of historical distortions and attacks on mainstream media and attacks on researchers, we also include that in the report na ginagawa naman ito mostly nung pro-Marcos media universe, di ba? Na meron silang influencers, pero hindi lang influencers, yung mga experts na may mga PhD na din sila na nagpe-peddle ng kanya-kanyang justification, kanya-kanyang explanation to justify Marcos policies. We also discuss, historical distortion of Marcos na, of course, it's about a way of talking about martial law as the golden age. Pero may performance quality din ito. So we talk about it as a victimhood performance. Na, aba, yung Marcos family, victim sila. Victim sila ng history, pero victim din sila ng mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
So, may ganong kind of performance na for us, hindi ito quote-unquote disinformation. Parang it's a bigger ritual. It's a communicative performance na look at us, we're victims. And so, one needs to think about it as a narrative more than just a falsehood, right?
Mm-hmm. How would you define troll now? Kasi in one of your podcasts, you said that no one you interviewed admitted to being a troll. They don't consider themselves a troll. It's not part of their self-identification. And then you just mentioned trolly behavior. So let's get our definitions straight here. No, so is there an updated definition on this? And if you recall, none of the candidates admitted employing trolls, and Marcos Jr. himself explicitly said, "I have never hired any trolls." So, parang, being a troll is considered a really bad thing, no? So, you seem to be convinced they exist. So, ano bang troll in your context?
Yeah, great question around definitions. So there's the dictionary definition of a troll, which is an online user who is very provocative. So in a way, provocateur siya, diba? Parang through jokes, through snarky, sometimes like double meaning kind of humor and postings. They're meant to evoke a reaction, usually from more quote-unquote mainstream or parang vote against like mainstream assumptions. So they are contrarians, kumbaga. So yun yung traditional definition ng troll. Sa Pilipinas, merong mas specific connotations na siya, na nagkaroon na siya ng specific associations na, and that's what I try to push against, actually. And you're right, Howie, that in our report, we actually try to use troll as an adjective, but never to call someone a troll. Because parang, and to me, that's a thoughtfulness around, I really try to push against itong assumption natin, na the troll is, typically from low-income classes. They are bobotante, they are uneducated, hindi nakatapos ng high school, therefore na-brainwash sila ng Marcoses or ng Duterte, and therefore invading our online spaces and misbehaving in online spaces.
And but to not me, necessarily paid. Hindi ito mga bayaran. I mean, they're not paid to do this. Parang organic ito. They're just, like yeah. they belong to a certain class of people. Kasi akala ko all this time ang pag sinabing troll, you know, and troll farm, these are people who probably know better, but they're paid to say these things, post these things, and you know, spread hate and
yeah.
vitriol and all of that. So bayaran sila. But you're saying you don't have to be paid to be to fit this definition of a troll in the Philippine
context.
You
don't have to be. Especially the US definitions of trolls are actually de-emphasize the paid aspect. Sa Pilipinas, mas may association ang word troll na sa bayaran, di ba? And to me, what I'm trying to push against with yung also the idea of troll hunting and disinformation literacy campaigns, parang nagigisyang troll hunting or bot busting. For me, it's a waste of energy, to be honest. It's also a moral displacement na hinahunting natin yung mga low-level accounts. Parang we spend a lot of energies looking for these accounts on Twitter, pero for me, it's important to have a sense of who's actually running the show, who's controlling all of these accounts, who has received the big budget to organize all of these influencers to coordinate on a specific message. And so the advocacy that I have tried to emphasize in Catch Me If You Can and also in this report is, sino ba talaga yung top troll? Sino ba talaga yung chief architect of disinformation? Sino ba talaga yung chief strategist who's running the show? And the earlier study that I released in 2018, and you were there for the launch, Howie, parang sinasabi namin doon na actually, parang ang dami nating energy focus on it. Sino ba itong anonymous trolls? When in reality, open secret naman kung sino talaga yung mga namamalakad ng campaign within the PR industries. So I think that's my intervention around it. So okay. I hope.
So yung concept ng troll farm, legitimate ba yan? I mean, is it a valid concept? Kasi yung troll farm, because there are, or are there people, like armies of people, small armies of people who are employed, they're paid to post certain things and attack certain people. May mga ganun talaga.
Yeah. So that's a good question. So from my own personal experience, I've been doing this research for over 5 years now. I have never been physically in a troll farm that looks like a call center. Never. So parang the idea, di ba, na parang these are like rows and rows of computer or parang mga and parang it's a kind of like rote and repetitive kind of copy-paste work na parang these are, you know, low-level employees. Actually, parang the quote-unquote troll farms that I have been privy to and seen and also heard from, like in our interviews in Catch Me If You Can, they're in a way temporary arrangements. So parang I will be doing a black operations campaign for a politician for 3 months, pero I'm gonna be doing it from my own home computer. For some of them, they do it out of public relations firms, in boutique PR firms in Makati. So hindi siya shady. At the same time, parang we had one episode in Catch Me If You Can, episode 1 naman, na PR firm yung kanyang employer, akala niya mag-work siya dun sa opisina nila sa Quezon City, pero dinala sila sa parang headquarters next to the mayor's office. Because yun pala yung magiging niyang kliyente. So, iba't iba yung look ng troll farm, and most of the time, hindi siya call center style. Actually, very flexible work arrangement siya. Gig siya for 3 months or 6 months at a time. Renewable yung contract. Hindi siya yung parang daily. Yung title nila is not a troll, di ba? Parang no one is employed as a full-time troll. Parang palaging part-time lang ito, gig lang ito, added income ko lang ito. And that's, yeah, what we revealed in Catch Me If You Can. And you can hear from them directly.
Yeah. Oo. Well, that's interesting nga. So halimbawa itong mga itong some of the recent more recent ones, no? They were quite open about what they were doing. They were leading teams, they were working from home, they were approached by middleman, etc. I mean, you would you call that person a troll or just another influence operator?
Yeah, so I prefer the term influence operator just in the sense na what they're actually doing is quite diverse and creative as well. Again, the idea of the troll is shit posters lang sila, parang they just, 'di ba, parang they're just very crass or parang nagmumura lang sila online, parang walang strategy, but actually these people are very smart. They are very creative. They use a lot of jokes and inside humor. They use montage. On one of the episodes we talked to a meme factory operator and ang galing ng mga memes niya na nagva-viral talaga dahil funny naman talaga. Parang they use music and a music overlay over Sara Duterte's own voice, 'di ba, to comment and parody her, pero hindi naman siya outright disinformation. So I prefer to use the term influence operations. But for me, those still raise a lot of important questions about ethics and regulation. So the fact na, so in that particular case, this person was doing a set of memes attacking Marcos and Sara Duterte. Pero nagre-report siya sa intermediary, never to any specific politician or political party. A lot of money was invested in this group of meme operators, but were all of their works, you know, officially reported as part of campaign expenses? That's an open question that I think is important to discuss in terms of, we want campaigns to be fair. We want campaigns to follow a set of regulations. So that I think is an important set of questions in terms of fairness, diba?
Yeah. Well, the implication in that interview, John, was that particular operation was not even officially connected, and maybe the campaign team of Lenny Robredo didn't even know about it.
I spoke to Ma'am Lenny as well. Sabi ko, Ma'am, I'm sure hindi niyo naman kilala to. Tapos of course, hindi naman.
And so it's very hard for them to control that. And it would be hard to regulate it, in fact.
Yeah, and buti na lang, the meme operator we discussed, at least based on his disclosures, there's nothing disinformative in terms of what they actually produced. But I don't think other outfits would maintain those ethical standards, don't you think? We also have examples, Howie, from 2019 naman, na it was actually a foreign business person who was funding a group of influence operators to help elect a city mayor. So again, this outfit, this group of meme operators were doing it to promote a local mayor, pero ang nagpondo sa kanila is a foreigner.
So which is a violation of campaign law. No.
And it's foreign interference. Yes, absolutely, Howie. So I think parang to me, those are ethical questions na hindi natin usually na pag-uusapan, kung ang pag-uusapan natin palaging false ba ito or true. And those were some of the examples that we wanted to also bring in na, uy, kailangan natin to pag-usapan in our public sphere, but also sa industriya ng political consultancies.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious though, what should be the parameters now be for election campaign communication strategies, yeah, no? Kasi halimbawa yung that first definition you mentioned for troll, no? Sa the dictionary definition doesn't sound negative at all. Yung being a provocateur, being a contrarian, Jose Rizal then was a troll, di ba? Back then, and he was even called a propagandist, di ba? So didn't really have such a negative connotation back then, no? And one thing you pointed out in one of your podcasts was that the candidates themselves, the presidential and vice presidential candidates, in general, their campaign rhetoric was positive. No, they weren't attacking. They were not being real live trolls, di ba? As opposed to previous campaigns, which were more negative, and especially political mm-hmm. campaigns there in the United States, di ba? And yes. in other Western countries, napaka negative. All of us heard Donald Trump for years, no? How he talked about his opponents, etc. No, so I just found it interesting that you mentioned that dito the rhetoric was generally positive, no? I mean, unity, di ba? Radical love. I mean, it was so warm and fuzzy, no? Yung mga campaign themes, mm-hmm. no? As opposed to, if you contrast that with the Duterte campaign, who, you know, during the campaign, yes. he was already threatening to kill people and, you know, people yes. should die and all of that, no? There was a lot of misogyny and the languages. At the same time, there was a lot of online campaign activity, maybe not connected with the campaigns themselves officially, which were quite negative, no? So if you consider that negative campaigning has always been part of politics in liberal democracies and in most democracies, no? The online, you know, the dark tactics online for these campaigns enable the candidates themselves to rise above the toxicity and, you know, kind of project this image yes. of, you know, being I'm above all of that. I want to be more virtuous than what you're seeing online, di ba? But in reality, all of these yeah. campaigns were employing or had supporters who were spreading toxicity online.
Yeah, parang you're so right, Howie. Thanks for putting it in your own words and explaining it so thoughtfully. Parang may distribution of labor, 'di ba? Na parang yung mga attack dogs mo, sila yung mga online influencers. You can have you can run a super dirty campaign online but try to present yourself as respectable in mainstream spaces. And I think that is enabled by social media architectures. That is enabled by a lot of gray areas that we have around political campaigns. I think one of the examples we mentioned in the report that for us raises a lot of questions around ethics, and what precedent it might set as well was the example of in our infographic we call her Senator Satirist, and I think kilala naman natin kung sino ito.
Sino itong malikhaing senador na yan? At ano pa ang mga makabagong paraan ng influence operation sa politika? Podmates, abangan ang part 2 ng aming pag-uusap ni Professor Jonathan Ong. This episode was produced by the team of Yumar Yanga and Pau Requesto and edited by JR Magtoto with the wonderful people of GMA News and Public Affairs Digital. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Till the next pod, mabuhay kayo at ingat lagi!